This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Pleased you're starting your week for us on 16th day of September 2024. And happy 58th birthday to our former governor, John Bel Edwards. And as we know, there was another assassination attempt on the former president, Donald John Trump. And we will talk a bit about that later, but fortunately for him and for our country and humanity, it was unsuccessful. But we do start our show with a lady from our midst who's been in the news, Amanda Jones, and a librarian who's become one of the top anti-censorship advocates in the country. And she has been featured in a lot of places, including recently in the New York Times. And the story from Alexandra Alter starts this way. One Sunday morning 2 years ago, Amanda Jones, a middle school librarian in Watson, Louisiana, woke up and saw an email on her phone that left her shaking and breathless. The expletive-laced message from a stranger accused her of being a pedophile and a groomer and concluded with the threat, "You can't hide. We know where you work. You have a large target on your back." It said, "Click, click. See you soon." And that has propelled Amanda into the national spotlight, something she did not seek. But she is with us to talk about what has happened in her life, and she has written a book about her experiences. And that, of course, is also getting lots of play, That Librarian. And good morning to you, Amanda Jones. Hi, Amanda.
Good morning. Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, tell us about this odyssey and how you have been a reluctant warrior. I don't think you really sought the national spotlight, but you have it, and what you're doing in the midst of all this attention you're receiving.
I just went as a resident of my community and spoke at a local library board meeting about the dangers of censorship. And then I was targeted by several men. And I decided to fight back, and I wrote a book to tell my story. And I think it's just very important to get the truth out about what's happening to our nation's library.
877-217-5757 is your number. talk@talklouisiana.org is our email. And the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. And it is a world in which many, of course, are concerned that libraries will no longer be sanctuaries from censorship, that we will have massive reviews of what people can read. And your thoughts about where that is going right now, Amanda?
Well, we're seeing it, you know, it's happening in Louisiana, but it's happening all across the United States. People are taking book pages out of context. They're insisting that sexually explicit material is in children's sections of libraries, which is not true. And then librarians are targeted, you know, harassed, defamed. And it's really an attack on the First Amendment and, you know, what we stand for as a country, freedom of speech, freedom to learn. It's a, you know, full out assault on libraries right now.
James Carville has been on this show a few times, and he said once that we don't really have a problem in our country with people reading. The problem we have is for people not reading, and it's something we should encourage to open people's viewpoints and experiences. But why is there this assault, you believe, on anything that is on the shelves that we don't agree with?
Well, there's several problems to these attacks. There are people that legitimately believe what they're seeing on social media about inappropriate materials in libraries. But what we're seeing, particularly in Louisiana, is that politicians are stoking these flames of fear, and so basically, so they can pander for votes and swoop in to give solutions to problems that don't exist. Change legislation. It all goes back to money and power and the defunding of libraries, and it's similar to the assault on our public education system.
Again, your number 877-217-5757. We're visiting with Amanda Jones. Her book is That Librarian. A listener, this is Denise in Tangipahoa Parish. She says she knows a little bit about you, that you grew up in the Meade area, hometown of former Governor Edwards. I believe you were a member of the Meade Baptist Church, so you're certainly not immune to exposure to traditional Christian doctrine, but does that doctrine conflict with what is going on in libraries? Good question from Denise.
So I was raised Southern Baptist. I'm still a practicing Christian, and but I was raised that God is love, and we should all love one another and be good Samaritans. And what we're seeing now is completely against what I was taught and what I believe. We're seeing attacks on people, you know, questioning people's Christianity and belief systems just because they support libraries. It's not the way I was raised in my church, and it's sad to see these horrific attacks on our community members, libraries, librarians and educators who go into our field because we love children, we love our community, and we want to do great things.
Now, another listener notes about this group that took after you, Citizens for a New Louisiana. I believe you actually filed suit. The Facebook page Bayou State of Mind that is run by this group posted an image of Amanda, which stated she was advocating teaching anal sex to 11-year-olds. Now, this is the kind of stuff we have going on in American politics, like eating cats and dogs in Springfield, Ohio. But why in the world would somebody who's trying to make a case do something so ridiculously inflammatory? And obviously, this is not the point of view that you're trying to convey. I know that.
Yeah. In fact, in my book, I give the complete speech that I gave that night, which had nothing to do with anything that meme says. I went and spoke about censorship and about how we already have policies and procedures in place in our local library and in libraries everywhere. What they sought to do is silence me. I was very outspoken, and so they attempted to silence me in the thoughts that if they silenced me, they would silence everyone else in the community. And that if they harassed me, I would stop. But what they actually did was make me want to speak out more. And so, you know, that's what I'm doing. But I, you know, it was a general speech that any librarian or anybody that has rational thought would give. And, you know, I've even been complimented by Terry Zuplat, President Obama's former speechwriter, on the speech. He, too, had the same question. How could anyone draw these opinions based on the speech that I gave? It's a mystery.
In 2021, Amanda was recognized by School Library Journal as the School Librarian of the Year. And a year later, in 2022, she created Louisiana Citizens Against Censorship. This organization, of which she is executive director, as well as the Livingston Parish Library Alliance. How is your position as an advocate going, Amanda?
Well, I do want to give props to our executive director for Louisiana Citizens Against Censorship is Lynette Mejia of Lafayette. I'm just one of the founding members, but we've been working really hard. We've built a coalition. We were able to defeat 7 anti-library bills through building coalitions and 44,000 emails to the legislature last year. And this week in Livingston Parish, our Livingston Parish Library Alliance this past week, we launched Operation Truth, which was a 7-day campaign to get the truth of what's happening in our libraries out to our community. And I think it's been pretty eye-opening in Livingston Parish.
Amanda Jones is with us, and her name has become synonymous with anti-censorship. She's against book bans, and I think most people are. But why does the squeaky wheel often get the grease? Why does the loudest voice in the room sometimes get his or her way? What do you think about that, Amanda?
I think that people tend to believe everything they see on social media, and hate seems to be selling lately. And it's easy to believe lies. It's easy to join in with the hate. There's this mob mentality. But if people would take a deep breath, sit back and look at the facts, they would see that, you know, a lot of these things are unfounded, just like the unfounded charges against me. You know, we have social media plays a huge role in this, and we have to get back to rational thought and looking at facts.
James in Metairie. James, you're on with Amanda Jones. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Good morning, and hello to your guest. It's Christian conservatives couldn't ban or censor or prohibit that have nothing to do. Now, Project 2025, I'm looking at a statement from a website called Library Technology, where it says the Project 25 advocates call for increased censorship and threaten criminal penalties on educators to discourage librarians from providing certain books. Your opinion, please, and thank you.
Amanda?
It's Christian nationalism that's pushing this, and you'll see that there, this past legislative session in Louisiana, there were several bills to criminalize librarians. They want to instill fear so that librarians are afraid to do their jobs and stand strong against censorship. We even have a bill filed by Representative Dickerson to imprison librarians who attended our professional, American Library Association conferences if we ask for reimbursement from our jobs to learn and grow. It's obviously an attempt to stifle our voices and to stifle the books and the authors.
We'll be back and spend a few more minutes with Amanda Jones. And then it's Danny Heitman on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Amanda Jones is with us. She grew up in Amite, went to the Amite Baptist Church, graduated from Southeastern Louisiana University with an elementary education degree, and inspired by her love of Harry Potter, she got her librarian certification as an undergraduate, logged 14 years as an English language arts teacher and 9 as a school librarian, and then boom, she becomes a focal point for the censorship movement in America, with people making all kinds of weird allegations about what she thought and what she was not promoting. But she has written about what's happened, and that includes some threats against her. And the book is That Librarian. 877-217-5757. Please be brief in our remaining moments with Amanda Jones. James in Longview, Texas. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Amanda. I just want to ask a totally serious question. How would you draw parallels between, say, movie theaters that have ratings from G to NC-17 versus a library?
All right.
Well, I would say that, collection development policies in libraries require us to use professional reviews before we order books for libraries. So we follow professional reviews that do give suggestions for age ranges. So books in public libraries are placed according to professional reviews. So there's not going to be any sexually explicit material or any adult books in children's sections. You can also look at, it's a little harder in libraries. There are approximately 3 million books published each year. Compare that to a couple hundred movies. It'd be harder to have a rating system for every single book put out, but we do use professional reviews and judgment. And again, anything that is rated for adults will never be found in a children's section of the library or in a school library for that matter.
You have a quote in a story from the advocate Susan Larson saying one of the best things a parent can do is read to their children, make book suggestions, and have conversations about what their children are reading. How often is that done?
I think it's done a lot. I'm a certified reading specialist also, and I agree with that, statement. Parents should go to the library with their children, help them pick out books. If they don't want them to get a book, don't. And then read those books with them. Parents should have the say and control over their own children and what they read, and they should definitely read. My mom read to me every single day growing up, and it just built the love of reading and empathy for others.
Well, you have become famous, and with that, of course, there's a bad side, and you've experienced that in full bloom. But on the whole, has it been a positive, or is it still a work in progress?
Well, the book came out, and the haters also came out in droves because they didn't like reading about themselves. But I will say that I'm trying to make lemonade out of lemons, and I want to set a good example for kids, and I want to stay positive. And I'll say overwhelmingly, maybe not from within my community, but the support for me and for libraries has been overwhelmingly supportive and amazing. And but it's a work in progress.
Final call for Amanda Jones. Danny Heitman is next. This one is from Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. I just like to say that I agree with everything your guest has said. My daughter and I are at the Goodwood Library every Saturday, you can't beat it. She loves the graphic novels, and there's math tutoring there, and it's just a great place to go. It's the best tax dollars I've ever spent.
All right. And over 300,000 library cards in our little parish of East Baton Rouge, biggest parish in Louisiana, but it's pretty small compared to Harris County, which has 4.8 million residents in the great city of Houston. But Amanda Jones, that was a testament from, I think there are far more people like Mike in Villa Del Rey than some of these keyboard cowards who make threats and can't back them up.
Yeah, I like that term, keyboard cowards.
Thank you. In fact, I think I may have made that up. So right on the fly. So anyway, thank you. But is there this intimidation? Obviously, has not worked against you, but it takes a toll. I would imagine you you'd rather not have it. Nobody really likes that sort of thing, and I've gotten it on a far lesser basis. But you got to go with what you got, and I don't think you're stopping, are you?
No, I'm not stopping, and it does take a toll on me. But you know, when you have a platform, you should use it, or it's a waste of a platform. And I didn't seek this out, but it, you know, it's here, so I might as well speak out against it. And I refuse to be silent.
Well, thank you. Keep going. The book is That Librarian from Amanda Jones, and hopefully this is the first of a few times we'll talk with you. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks for having me.
We're joined now by Danny Heitman. In 2020, after 33 years as a full-time staffer at The Advocate, he took a new position as editor of Forum. Now, that was after more than half his life at The Advocate. The Forum's a quarterly journal of ideas published by the National Collegiate Honor Society, Phi Kappa Phi. The Honor Society has 100,000 active members around the world. It advances research and scholarship through more than 1 million in annual grants and awards to deserving scholars. And he continues to write his column every week. Every Sunday, we read Danny Heitman. And last week, I was pleased that you wrote a piece about the Library of America honoring the fiction of the late, great Ernest James Gaines, who died on November 5th, 2019, and coming up on 5 years. But he left his mark, and that mark is indelible, Danny Heitman.
Good morning, Jim. And since we're on the topic of libraries, I did want to mention that James Gaines did not walk into a public library until he was 16 years old.
In Vallejo, California, I believe. Yeah,
that's right. He grew up at a time in Louisiana when there were no library opportunities for African Americans. And he did not walk into a public library until he was 16 years old. His family had moved to California, and that event changed his life. You know, he was exposed for the first time to Mark Twain, Leo Tolstoy, William Shakespeare. It changed his life, and libraries have that power, and they're changing lives every day, and it's important that we make them available to every single person in our community.
And for those who spend a lot of time in libraries as a kid, it has to be a special thrill with somebody like you who's written a book to see your book on the shelf right there, Danny Heitman with Ernest Gaines. Well, almost in alphabetical order, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I would never put myself in the company of James Gaines. I will say I grew up in a family where four of my aunts were librarians. And I grew up several blocks from our library. The library was literally the coolest place in town because it had the best air conditioning. I went there to stay cool in the summer. And through that connection, I just was exposed on a regular basis to the world of books. It changed my life, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, many people on this show I rarely see other than when they're in the studio. And unfortunately, that's often true of Danny. I see him maybe once or twice every year or so, and then he comes on the show and we have a nice conversation. I consider him a friend, but we don't hang out. But Ernest Gaines was one of those rare people. I actually became friendly with him and his lovely wife, Diane, who's probably listening now in Oscar, Louisiana, or in New Orleans, where she spends a lot of her time, her hometown. And They were special people in my life. We had the same birthday, January 15th, and he died on November 5th. So it was 115 both ways. So for those of us into numbers, Ernest Gaines left us in 2019 when he was 86, and that was far too soon, Danny Heitman, far too soon. He was still going strong.
True, and it's been 50 years ago this year that the television adaptation of the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman aired on national television. And for someone like me, who was 10 years old in 1974, that was the first time I had seen emotionally complicated African-American characters on television.
What and a performance from Cicely Tyson.
It was transformative, and it was a cultural moment in the life of our country, and we have James Gaines to thank.
You're using his middle name. I love that.
Yeah.
Ernest James Gaines. He became a superstar, as did Cicely Tyson, who was once married to Miles Davis. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, Robin Dow producing, and we continue with Danny Heitman, who is editor of The Forum, but he also continues, and thank goodness, as a writer of note with The Advocate every Sunday. He is on the editorial page, and he and Lanny Keller were really quite a tandem, the Danny and Lanny team, and I miss you, both of you, and The Advocate does a good job in these days doing it with a shorter workforce than we saw back in the day. But two guys who are really hard to replace were Lanny Keller and Danny Heitman. And I know it was a labor of love, 33 years there. But you decided, as you were approaching your 60th birthday in a few years, you decided to go another route. Was that a tough decision?
Well, I certainly love my newspaper family, and I continue to love my newspaper family. I was not seeking another position, but I was offered this wonderful opportunity to work for Phi Kappa Phi, which is a national collegiate honor society, does enormously wonderful work across the world in advancing research and scholarship. I had never edited a magazine before. That was seemed like a great opportunity for me, and I really enjoy it. The national office of Phi Kappa Phi is located pretty much across the street from Main Library here in Baton Rouge on Goodwood Boulevard. It's about 10 blocks from my house, so I walk to work most days, and it's just an enormous privilege to work for Phi Kappa Phi.
And Danny is... He's from a talented family. Your better half is also a talented journalist. So it's a powerhouse Heitman family, and we're glad you're both in Baton Rouge. And people like you and Catherine are special people who make our community a better place. And we need more people who are expressing the joy of reading and learning and the intellectual curiosity that is necessary. I suspect, unfortunately, there are people who couldn't name the last three governors or the last three presidents, or have not read a book in many years. And why are we so intellectually vapid, spending a lot of time on our phones, but not many days in libraries, which, of course, is a much better place to learn about the world at large?
Well, I mean, I think the nature of social media is that it's addictive, and I think the internet has brought many great things to our society. It's a wonderful tool, but it's a tool that needs to be used responsibly. And I think in the same way that people should have a balanced diet, I also think we need a balanced diet of information, and that means reading great stuff on the internet, but also sticking your head in a book and sticking your head in a newspaper, and you get a variety of different information streams, and it makes you a better person.
Next month, Danny will be moderating a series of discussions in the East Baton Rouge Parish Library on effective citizenship. That's a pertinent topic.
Sure. There was a recent book by a distinguished diplomat named Richard Haass, and his book is called The Bill of Obligations. And his basic argument is, sure, our public officials have big responsibilities, but the average citizen has responsibilities too. And he outlines 10 responsibilities that we should really embrace as our Bill of Obligations. I'm going to quickly list them. Be informed, get involved, stay open to compromise, remain civil, reject violence, value norms, promote the common good, respect government service, support the teaching of civics, and put country first. And there's been a wonderful public documentary series based on Mr. Haas's book. And we're going to have a discussion series at the East Baton Rouge Parish Library throughout October. There's going to be 5 nights, October 2nd, 9th, 16th, 23rd, and 30th. We're going to air an episode of that series each night. And after the series airs at the library, we're going to have a discussion about it. We're going to have moderators. And I'm going to be one of the moderators for some of the nights. And then Ronnie Harris, who is a local civic leader here, is going to...
One of our favorite people.
Yeah, Ronnie's a wonderful guy. He's going to help moderate. And then Fayman Roberts, who is a current member of the Advocates Editorial Board, he's going to moderate too. This is for anyone of any party, and it's a great opportunity for people from all walks of life to come together and talk about our responsibilities as citizens. There's never been a more important time for us to have that conversation.
And earlier we were talking with Amanda Jones about the keyboard cowards who spew all kinds of nonsense and think they're – usually these are men who, for whatever reason, they've got some kind of deprivation in their life that they have to express in an appropriate way, and they do so anonymously. They would never, for example, call this show. They might send me an email under an assumed name, but they're not going to call the show. But another listener, Tom on Bluebonnet, and I'm glad he brought this up because I've been carrying this around for a few days. It was front page New York Times on Thursday. The social media platform Telegram has become a global sewer of criminal activity, disinformation, child abuse material, terrorism, racist incitement, according to a 4-month investigation by the Times, analyzing more than 3.2 million Telegram messages from 16,000 channels. Company which offers features that enable criminals, terrorists, and grifters to organize at scale and to sidestep scrutiny from the authorities has looked the other way as illegal and extremist activities have flourished openly on the app. And so that's the kind of stuff that's out there. Hamas, ISIS, and terror groups have thrived on Telegram, often amassing large audiences across dozens of channels. And I would say there's far more danger about what's happening on our phones than what's happening in libraries, Danny.
Well, that's certainly true. And I would encourage anyone who is a library critic to visit one. I think you... I work across the street from the biggest library in Baton Rouge and possibly the biggest library in Louisiana, the main library at Goodwood Boulevard. So I go there quite frequently, several times a month. I went in there a couple of days ago. Prominently displayed was a memoir by Mike Pence, a former Republican vice president. There were several works about spirituality and biblical living. This is not exactly a hotbed of radical communism that I witness. So I think libraries are wonderful resources where people from all walks of life can get all sorts of viewpoints.
877-217-5757 for the remarkable Danny Heitman, who has celebrated, I think your birthday is January 31st, isn't it?
That's right, Jim.
Same as Norman Mailer. Same
sure.
as Nolan Ryan.
Right, I'm 60 years old.
So. 60, so you, and this is funny because Bob Mann, our friend, has written a lot of great books, and some for the ages, like Vietnam, A Grand Delusion, The Walls of Jericho, but he's openly said that his best-selling book is Politics for Dummies. And so you write some things, and of course, yeah. They're a bit high-minded for some, but I love them. But the thing that of late that's gotten the most attention is when you said you've officially reached the stage of being a codger, right?
I came out and decided to live my truth as a codger in the pages of the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago. And basically, this revelation came to me when I walked out to get my newspaper. I was wearing a winter jacket over my pajamas, and I had a baseball cap on, and I realized this is exactly the same wardrobe as my former neighbor, now deceased, who 30 years ago I had basically concluded was a codger because he was wearing exactly the same outfit. And that's when I looked in the mirror and realized you need to come to terms with the fact that you, Danny Heitman, are now a codger. And I think I'm going to like being a codger, Jim.
Well, today, what is it, 60 is the new 35. That's what I hear.
Yeah, but I mean, to your point about that piece I wrote in the Wall Street Journal, I mean, I heard from people across the country about that. I think it, of course, we need to write about politics. It's important. I also think we need to write about stuff that is not political, that does have a lighter tone to it, because it helps remind us that we're human beings and that we probably have more in common than we assume.
That's what I hear. Doug on I-10. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, good morning, and good morning to your guest, Mr. Heitman. I wanted to point out there is a common thread between your three guests this morning, and the one who's coming up, you know, the administrative state is what protects our lives, our health, and our rights, and the people trying to do away with that in the interest of getting more power are aligned with the bullies who are trying to take away our libraries. And, you know, the librarian you talked to is very inspirational. She stood up. More people need to do that because bullies generally don't stop unless there's a cost involved. Why would they? Why would they stop if they're not going to pay a price? And knowing that people will fight back is the first step in trying to control these folks. Otherwise, what's to stop them? And just telling them that you don't feel good about what they're doing or they're hurting your feelings generally isn't enough.
All right. I love Doug's sentiments.
All I can say is that I've been a library user since I was a child, and I'm 60 years old now. You know, one of the reasons that my wife, Catherine, and I moved to our neighborhood is because it was near a library. We think it is a central part of our community and worth preserving and worth protecting.
Well, Danny Heitman, let's keep going. And belated happy 60th birthday.
Thank you.
Born in 1964. He was born on the 51st birthday of 41st birthday of Norman Kingsley Mailer, another great writer. Danny Heitman, thanks again. Back soon, and we'll return with another segment of Note after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, Robin Dow producing, and we're joined now by Nancy Rosenblum. She has, along with Russell Muirhead, written a compelling book, Ungoverning, the Attack on the Administrative State and the Politics of Chaos at a Time When We Face Ever More Pressing and Complex Challenges in Need of Large-Scale State Action, from climate crises to pandemics, persistent inequities. We also face a new form of politics specifically geared toward the destruction of state capacity. And this is what the focus of Ungoverning is. And good morning to you, Nancy Rosenblum, who is a professor at Harvard University. I'm sorry, Nancy, go ahead.
Good morning, Jim, and that was a terrific summary.
Well, tell us where we are as far as what you have termed, I think accurately, as a politics of chaos with the attacks on our institutions.
Well, you may remember that we first heard about something like this when that master of chaos, Steve Bannon, talked about I want to bring everything crashing down and the deconstruction of the administrative state. And we've now seen how that works in practice. We give it the name ungoverning. And really what it is, it's an attack on the capacity and the legitimacy of government, especially the part that we call the administrative state. And I should just say briefly what that is, because the term is not, administrative state is not a familiar one. It's the vast array of government agencies that shape and implement and adjudicate and enforce public policies of every kind. And it's made up of the day-to-day workers who do everything during the ordinary and the extreme and during the wars and the emergencies. And it's necessary, the administrative state. The legislature may pass bills, the executive may sign them, the judiciary may pass judgment on them. But it's these appointed officials and civil servants who translate laws on paper and action. And we're now into many years where President Trump and allies of his have tried to describe the administrative state as a conspiracy, as a deep state.
877-217-5757, your number for Talk Louisiana. And for Nancy Rosenblum, her book is On Governing, the Attack on the Administrative State and the Politics of Chaos. And this concentrated attack that you outline on our political institutions, according to many, threatens to disable the essential workings of government. Is this something that will happen brick by brick, or is it already crumbling at the edges based on what you have detailed that's going on in our world right now?
I think under former President Trump, it was not brick by brick. It was a sort of wholesale assault, but it wasn't necessarily directed at the things that other people and his whole program would want, because he was willful and he was arbitrary. And so he would attack the administrators and the departments that he felt were unloyal to him about the specific things that he wanted. For example, the Justice Department, where he wanted them to prosecute his political enemies and so on. I think it's now become a much more organized and wholesale and less capricious philosophy of ungoverning. And one place where we see that articulated now is in this project for Mandate for Leadership of 2025, which is not just a discussion of a large compendium of discussion of public policies they want, like universal regulation of abortion and public health services, but mainly it's an attack on the administrative state, and it sets out a very orderly schedule of how you get rid of the public servants and disloyal leaders so that you have a dysfunctioning administrative state and what's left is the will of a leader.
Well, the New York Times in an editorial yesterday from Stephen Ratner notes that Project 2025 would change America, among other things, raise income taxes on lower earners, cap Medicaid, eliminate Head Start, end student loan forgiveness, repeal the Inflation Reduction Act, ban the abortion pill, and bolster presidential power. But the president, former president, Donald John Trump, says he doesn't know anything about it, hasn't even read it. Do you think he's on the level, or is he this?
No, I don't think he's on the level. I do think he hasn't read it. It's a 900-page document, and he's known for not wanting to read long things or even short things. But I think what interests Russ and I is not only the policy proposals, which are he's right to disavow strategically because they're enormously unpopular. What we focus on is the large part of this manifesto for 2025, which is about destroying the capacity to do any kind of governing at all. And this has really been our focus, that 2025 wants to train people who will be loyal to whoever the president is. Their hope is it's Donald Trump or someone of his ilk, and who are not experts. I mean, the way government works is it requires specialized knowledge, and we know that there's been a long-term attack on science and knowledge, and it requires regular procedures, which, you know, anyone who wants to govern by will and immediately hates procedures, and it's expertise and procedures that make government work through the administrative state. And so Project 2025 should be understood not only is an attack on policies that people like or single instances of undoing, like getting rid of the Department of Education. It should be understood as a wholesale philosophy of ungoverning.
The book is Ungoverning, from Nancy Rosenblum, who we're hearing from, and Russell Muirhead, The Attack on the Administrative State and the Politics of Chaos. The authors detail challenges faced by public officials entrusted with running the government who are now facing intimidation. Is it working, or is this something that can be overcome and we can all move forward and have government in its rightful place as a player in the society that has made America great?
Well, let me say first where it's working and where your listeners have probably been alerted to it, and that's in the administration of elections. Stop the Steal is not just about changing the results of the elections. It does that through attacking the administration of elections. And almost every day, the major news reports threats and intimidation of election workers. Some have been recorded from the past, the presidential election, where really people's lives were destroyed. There's been all over the country an exodus of people who have some knowledge and experience in registering voters and getting out ballots and collecting results and counting results. And these people resign in droves because of the threats and intimidation against them. And as well, there are, Trump allies in the political parties who are, have gotten seats in the state legislature, and the state legislatures themselves are refusing to certify a vote that is not for Trump. So this is going on right in front of our eyes at the heart of democracy, which is elections. Can it be stopped? I think that will require, frankly, nothing less than a radical change in the Republican Party, which used to be a conservative party, which has become an extremist party, and whether it can be returned to its normal character of conservatism in opposition to a progressive Democratic Party, I think is going to be the answer.
Well, the book, Ungoverning, as you can imagine, is getting nice plaudits from people like E.J. Dionne, who, of course, is a brilliant intellectual in his own right. It says, drawing together philosophical reflections on democracy's obligations to its citizens with a lively, practical sense of how government works, Nancy has offered a passionate defense of the now contested work of making our society fairer, safer, and more responsive. Congrats on your work. It's an important read, and the book is Ungoverning. It's been a pleasure, Nancy Rosenblum.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you. And we do want to note, as we part company, and of course we'll be talking about this because there was another attempt on the life of former President Donald J. Trump. It has no place in our society. He was playing golf Sunday afternoon, as in yesterday, when a Secret Service agent spotted a man with a rifle standing by a chain link fence on the perimeter of the course. It was an assault weapon. The agents opened fire. The man fled in a black Nissan, but was eventually taken into custody. The suspected gunman is identified as Ryan Wesley Ruth, 58 years old, from Hawaii. Now, former President Ford also survived two assassination attempts in 1975, and the last one was a real close call. Sarah Jane Moore, she was in a crowd of about 3,000 people who gathered outside San Francisco's St. Francis Hotel to see the president. President Ford was about 40 feet away from Sarah Jane Moore, and she shot at him with a .38 revolver, narrowly missing him, and then she fired again, and this one she had direct aim, but a fellow named Oliver Sipple stopped the attack, and he was later identified for being a gay man, a former Marine, and it ruined his life, and this is an unfair thing that a man who was a hero was outed at a time when that sort of thing was explosive. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.